Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today, and we're talking about pet care and behaviors with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Sandy, a pleasure to see you.
It is nice to be back here again.
It's been a month, and lots have happened, including an incident in Waukesha County where a deadly bacterial strain that had killed more than 1,000 dogs in outbreaks in Las Vegas and Miami was found in some of the dogs that were stricken and later died at Waukesha County.
Yeah, and this is actually in one of the shelters there. And what's interesting is when we hear about this, we think it's a brand new infection that is, you know, we've never known anything about. And when you start going back in the literature, I mean, I went back as far as 1982 and was still finding references of it, and I didn't go back further. I just said, okay, I don't have time to go any further. But yeah. So for at least the last 25 years, we've known about this particular bacteria. And it's a strep bacteria. It's called Strep zooepidemicus. It has only at this point been in shelters. And it seems to be a situation where that particular bacteria probably morphs into a more virulent strain. You put a bunch of dogs together that are probably not the healthiest because they've just, you know, been out on the streets or whatever, a little bit of crowding, you know, add in the fact that they're all under one roof, and so sometimes ventilation could be at a premium. Throw in power washing to, you know, aerosolize things as well to keep the things clean, which is typical for most big shelters, is to power wash the runs. And that seems to be what transmits this bug. Mm-hmm. What happened is in the Waukesha County area, they were able to just determine what it was very early on and shut the place down to no more foot traffic in or out and be able to treat affected dogs. And there weren't as many deaths as there were in other locations. That huge problem that happened in Las Vegas, it was actually over several months where it occurred.
Wow.
They just weren't aware of what was actually happening until, you know, after some testing and things had been done. So now that shelters have had their eyes open that this is a possibility, you know, they're on the lookout for it. And it causes a hemorrhagic pneumonia, meaning that the dogs get stricken very quickly with pneumonia, usually start, you know, having like frothy, bloody discharge coming up out of their nose and mouth and die very quickly without treatment. So nasty, nasty disease. But so far, it's never been found in the general dog population.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is our guest, and if you'd like to join in, we have some lines open for you in Madison at 263-1890 and toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. We're going to start off with someone who I think has some good news for you, Sandy.
Okay.
Hi, Edith.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been waiting for an opportunity to thank you. I was a caller who spoke to you way back in December, and I had only had my toy poodle, who was a rescue, for 5 months.
Okay.
And when I got him, after the rescuer had had him for about a month, he had just recently undergone oral surgery because his gums were so infected and bad. He had 8 rotten tooth on his bottom right, and they were taken out. And I was told, well, the healing would take a long time. So from that time until December, I had made his food very soupy because he couldn't lap up water. And you said, oh, no, it's too long.
Yeah.
Take him to the vet school, which I did.
Okay.
And they referred me to Dr. Gengler and one of his doctors.
Right. Dr. Snyder,
Sokup,
right?
Yeah. There were no bone chips. Mm-hmm. The healing was complete, and he looked at me and said, take him off wet food, give him dry food and water, and he's been fine ever since.
Well, that is wonderful. And I think sometimes having a specialist is, you know, helpful. And dentistry is something that veterinarians do every day in their clinic. And it's something that people tend to be a little reluctant about doing, but it can really improve the quality of the life of the pet. It's a source of infection for the rest of the body, and ignoring it is just going to shorten the pet's life and happiness. And the vet school does have a board-certified dentist on staff, and it's you know, we've got the, you know, the ability to be able to do specialized procedures like root canals and dental X-rays, which many vets are now learning how to do through, you know, special training programs and things. So it's pets don't have to live with an uncomfortable mouth any longer. Well, I'm glad your little poodle's doing well. Thanks for the good news. news.
Well, you're very welcome.
Edith, thank you. Appreciate your call. And let's see what's on Holly's mind in Elm Grove. Hi, Holly.
Good morning. I've got a 7.5-year-old male rescue. Looks like a Tonkinese, but who knows?
And that's, just for those listening, a kitty cat, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
A kitty cat.
All right.
And have had him for 7 years. And recently, as in last fall, rescued two cats through the Touched by a Paw cat rescue in Whitewater and brought them home and did the respective separation and gradual introduction. And everything was fine until last Thursday night when he attacked the little one,
mm-hmm.
and drew enough blood to have to call the carpet cleaners.
Oh, my goodness. So how long have you had the two new cats in your household?
About 7 or 8 months.
7 or 8 months. So it's been a long time. And they had been at that point getting along fine, no
yeah.
problems. Okay.
Not a problem at all.
Okay.
And I don't know what set him off. And consequently, right now, the only thing I've done is separate them
yeah.
and fill the house with Feel Away.
Okay. All right. Well, for those listening, Feel Away is a pheromone that is a synthetic cat pheromone that comes in a atomizer that you can plug in or a spray bottle. And it's what cats secrete when they're feeling comfortable and relaxed from their facial glands along their face. When they go up and headbutt you, they're actually marking you with this feel-good pheromone. And so by putting that in the environment, the theory is it makes cats feel more relaxed and comfortable. I don't know what happened. My guess is that something triggered your adult cat to get upset. And the best human analogy I could give would be you have a bad day at work and you turn around and take it out on your housemate, your spouse or whatever. You go home and you yell at them. And it's not they didn't do anything wrong, but it creates a problem. This is called redirected aggression, and I would bet that that's probably what happened. So if you wanted to paint a picture, stray cat sitting outside the door, he gets into, or outside the living room window, he gets upset with that. The other cat walks in the room, and he's all charged up, and because he's seeing this other cat, turns around and attacks the housemate. These are, tough cases to deal with. You're doing the right thing, though, keeping them separated until you can see that they're relaxed and comfortable in each other's presence. So gradually, let them see each other through the crack in the door. Some people will even install a screen door where a solid door would be so that you can just get an inexpensive wooden screen door so they can see each other through the screen, but not actually come in contact with each other. You just want to avoid future attacks down the road because now the one that was on the receiving end is going to be more defensive. When he sees the older cat, what's he going to do but probably run, which may trigger the older cat to chase. So we want to be able to have them both be comfortable in that environment. And I hope it turns around. There are some times where we're looking at medical management if we're finding that, just going back to square one with the introduction process doesn't seem to get things under control. And I hope that doesn't happen because even though I'm a veterinarian, using psychoactive drugs in cats is something that I don't like to do unless it's absolutely necessary.
Well, I don't either.
Okay.
But I appreciate the help.
All right.
And I hope that everyone else is
I hope the little one heals up fine. Yeah.
Holly, thanks. Good luck to you. Appreciate your call. And if you'd like to join in, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Sue's next in Wausau. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good morning. I have a 3-year-old. She's half Bichon and half Shih Tzu. And she has a terrible habit of eating her feces.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's really common problem. And
Okay.
And I can make a joke out about this because you've got a Bichon / Shih Tzu and you can start putting the names together and, maybe that's the problem. Sorry. Because we were just talking about all these designer breeds at work and I won't actually name, but I have bulldogs. And I said, wouldn't it be interesting to breed a bulldog with a Shih Tzu? Okay. And
yes,
All right. All right. So, back to what your problem is. It is a very common problem. It's normal for dogs to eat fecal material at certain times, such as when a mother dog is taking care of a litter of puppies. She's actually consuming the puppy's fecal material to keep the nest clean. So it's something that's hardwired into dogs. We always recommend going in and making sure that your dog has a clean bill of health, no digestive upsets, that they're on a good quality, low residue type diet where there's not a lot of non-digestible material coming out in the fecal material, that they're parasite free, no problem like that. Assume your dog is eating its own feces and not other dogs.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
On occasion, she will eat, you know, rabbit or that type
yeah.
of thing.
But. The health problem for your dog, besides the gross out factor, is dental disease. So get a good toothbrush and be brushing their teeth, because packing that fecal material on the teeth can cause a lot of problems. Why do we always get these calls right when people are eating lunch, you know? But okay. And then, you know, it can cause upset stomach and so on. So, I'll tell you the top three things to do for dogs that are stool eaters. Pick it up. Okay, sorry, but that's the truth. You've got to be out there, and as soon as your dog defecates, you need to be right there to be able to throw a ball, redirect the dog so that you can then pick the stool up. It's real easy when you have a fenced yard to just let the dog out on its own. And sometimes when that's the only entertaining thing in the environment, the dog develops a habit for doing this. So pick it up. You can try the deterrents like forbid and deter. I think deter's little motto is the number one product for dogs that eat number two. But you can get those at pet stores and so on. They go in tasteless, make the stool taste bad. I don't know how they determine that. But if your dog's been doing this for a long time, it's very unlikely that it's going to work, because the dog has learned that stool is good. And when I try to explain this to owners, I use a human analogy. I mean, Jim, you eat apples all the time, right? You like apples?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. What if you were to bite into an apple and it was mealy and yucky and horrible tasting? Would you give up on apples or just go, whoop, bad season for apples? I'll try again later.
Bad apple, I'll try again later.
Okay, yeah. Well, you turn that around, but substitute poop and dog, okay? Oh, bad season for poop because something's just made it taste bad. I'll try again later. So you go through your 30-day supply of the bottle of deter, and then the dog goes, maybe poop's back in season again. Tries it again, and then it's back doing it. For puppies and dogs that have not been doing this a long time, it works great because they've never learned that stool is a pleasurable thing. So you can give it a try. Unlikely that it's going to work.
Yeah, I've tried it in the past. She didn't bother her at all.
Yeah. Some people will try a product called Prozyme, which is an enzyme product that may help with digestion, may help make the stool taste bad. You can buy it over the counter. I was in my local grocery store and saw it sitting on the shelf in there. So some people find that that's an effective thing that you just use on a daily basis. But it comes down to redirecting, throw a ball, do something, pick it up. You can try the punishment technique with making it the stool taste bad. Yelling at the dog or whatever is not going to work, because that just makes the dog, hide what they're doing, and they may just be whipping around faster to grab it rather than stopping the behavior. So, don't do that if you're already trying to do that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, Sue.
Great.
Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you as we talk with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk about pet care and behaviors here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller, who will be back tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along as we talk with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And let's go to Ken next in Minocqua. Hi, Ken.
Oh, hi. Say, I just adopted a rescue Airedale.
Okay.
And she's 2 years old. Shows no aggression whatsoever, but
wonderful.
She's afraid of everything.
Oh.
And I understand she's new in the house and so forth, and I'm wondering if you just have maybe some tips as to
what you can do.
Yeah, what can I do to make her comfortable? I'm thinking I should just sort of leave her alone for a while and let her find her own way.
Yeah, I mean, how good of you to be rescuing a dog, and the big problem is we don't know what her background was. I don't know if you know where she came from. I mean, whether she was a kennel raised dog and some of it's just lack of experience. You've got a 2-year-old dog that may have been in a kennel, may not have been exposed to kids, televisions, vacuums, cars, everything that we take as just part of normal life. And all those things could be very frightening for the dog. And I think sometimes when we bring a dog in, they just get overwhelmed and we are, hovering over them and wanting them to be totally normal. So, backing off a little bit, letting her come to you is helpful. Maybe if she's got something that she's really passionate about, I don't know if she likes to play with toys, play with balls, I just had a very shy golden retriever in this morning, and I was able to get the dog to come out from under the bench in the exam room by bringing in some dog treats, little bits of dog beef jerky. And before the end of the exam, we were able to look in the dog's eyes and listen to her heart. And she happened to have a heart murmur, but she was calm enough that I could do a physical exam, whereas before she was just panting and pacing. So she was a very food motivated dog. So I don't know what is going to make your dog more comfortable, but those would be the things that you'd want to look at. If you can identify certain things that she finds quite terrifying, like the vacuum cleaner, then obviously have her out of the room when you're vacuuming, and maybe just let her get used to the vacuum cleaner off in a different part of the house while it's somebody else's vacuuming. You can have her sit and be relaxed and get treats and gradually expose her to these things. Kind of pick and choose, and just little steps, and trying not to overcome everything in one swoop. It's going to take a long time for a two-year-old dog. And this, she may just be genetically primed to be a very shy dog. And sometimes accepting that. I have a bulldog at home that I adopted. Her name's Vanna. She's absolutely wonderful, wonderful dog. Sweet as can be. But there's certain things that she's quite shy about. And I just have to accept the fact that if I have a house full of people, she's going to be in her crate and doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody. Whereas my other dog wants to be the center of attention. So, you know, sometimes just accepting that that's the way they are and not pushing them to be more than they are. And it's changing our perception of what they should be. Well, good luck with her. And talk to your veterinarian, too. Sometimes we mentioned that Feel Away product for cats. There is a product for dogs called DAP, Dog Appeasement Pheromone. It has a natural calming effect on dogs, and it's now available in a collar form. And some dogs with mild anxieties do really well walking around in this DAP haze. And it doesn't have any odor for us, but it just makes the dogs feel comfortable and more relaxed. And that might be something that would be worth trying.
D-A-F?
D-A-P.
D-A-P.
Dog Appeasement Pheromone. Yeah.
This is very un-Airedale-like behavior.
Most Airedales are, I mean, I affectionately call them airheads.
Yeah.
They're usually very outgoing and, all over the place and kind of in your face. But again, who knows what she's been through and, you know, what her mom and dad were like. So, but, you know, just give her time and don't push her too hard.
I need time and patience.
That's right.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. The number for you to reach Dr. Sandy Sawchuk in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Fred in Coleman next. Hi, Fred.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a question about rabies, the rabies shots.
Uh-huh.
My dog was to receive the shot in February, unbeknown to my wife and myself. She has scheduled the appointment for this week, but I was just curious to how long do they actually last? I know it's a 2-year shot or something to that effect. But
oh, good question. This is a really good question. The rabies vaccines that are on the market right now are labeled as either a 1-year or a 3-year vaccine. And there really isn't much difference between these vaccines, unless there's a 1-year for cats. It's a very different type of vaccine than your standard rabies. But when we're talking about rabies vaccines for dogs, 1-year and 3-year, and the labeling is primarily to meet local ordinance requirements. There are no 2-year vaccines on the market, but some communities do have a 2-year rabies ordinance. So you basically have to vaccinate your dog according to what the laws are. And right now in the Madison area, we have the ordinance of adult dogs that have received rabies vaccine as a puppy, and then a year later can be vaccinated every 3 years. We know that the vaccine provides much longer protection than that, but that's as far as we've got labeling, is out to 3 years. So if you're past that 3-year period of time, you basically are living with a dog that is a liability risk. So it's important for the owners, you and other pet owners, to make sure that your pet is kept up to date on the rabies vaccine. There's a study going on right now for rabies being a virus that can cause death in humans. This is one where we have to do what's called challenge studies, where they take animals, they vaccinate them, and then they give them the real bug, research animals, to see, are they protected? And right now, they do 3-year testing, and they're not required to go any longer than that. And, you know, no manufacturer is going to go to the expense of housing dogs for years to be able to prove that it lasts longer. One, they'd sell less vaccine, and, you know, why do that? There's a private study actually going on at the University of Wisconsin right now, privately funded, that's going to be looking at how long rabies vaccine provides protection. It really just started, and we're looking at potentially extending that expiration date by proving that it provides good protection for 5 to 7 years. So call me back in 7 years from now, and maybe we'll start seeing some labeling changes at that point.
Or something by another animal?
Pardon me?
How can they contract it? I mean, is there any other possible way besides being bitten?
It's being bitten by another animal. It's usually saliva transmitted. Your liability comes into play, though, is if your dog was overdue for rabies vaccination and were to bite another human being, then you're looking at quarantine and problems that way. So, you know, that's why you need to keep them up to date. It's for your liability.
We had a bonfire on Saturday, and my dog, the kids were coming up the back road, and it's dark, and he took off barking, and I don't believe he actually bit the girl. I think he gorged her with his claw.
Okay.
in her leg, because it's a single puncture.
Yep.
And I think he jumped on her. I mean, I witnessed it, but
the law doesn't care whether it's a scratch or a bite. If a human's been injured by a pet, that is and you know, it's still looked at as the same thing. So if that person were to go and seek medical attention, it would have been reported to authorities, and your dog would have been in violation, being overdue for rabies, and would have been slapped into quarantine, which would mean that you would be paying for 10 days of boarding in a quarantine facility. So it's our responsibility to make sure our pets are kept up to date.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Fred, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. Andrew in Madison is next. And Andrew, what's on your mind?
Well, I just got a new puppy.
Congratulations.
She's 12 weeks old. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I have a question about her fur growth. She's been growing really fast, which is kind of to be expected.
What kind of dog is this?
It's a Brussels Griffon.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem like her hair growth is really keeping pace with her body growth. There's little bare patches on, like, her paws and on her joints and neck.
Ah.
And I was wondering if that's normal or if there's something else going on just besides her normal growth.
I would doubt that that's normal.
Okay.
I'd be more concerned about a couple of things. Probably number one would be a skin parasite. There's one that likes to live in the hair follicles called Demodex that is not contagious dog to dog, nor does it get transmitted to people. I'm going to back up a little bit. It does go when mother dogs are nursing their babies. When they're first born, it's a normal mite that's found on dogs that is transmitted to the puppies when they're nursing. And for dogs with a normal immune system and no problems, these mites will stay at low numbers and nobody even knows that they're there. But sometimes we will see puppies that these mites will overgrow and you'll start seeing hair loss, especially in areas like you're describing, neck and legs and so on. So if you have not had your dog to a veterinary clinic yet, I think that that would be in order. One, your pet's due for a physical and probably 12-week vaccinations. And they may do what's called a skin scraping, where they take a little bit of the superficial layer off of the skin with a little spatula. They kind of squeeze it a little bit to get any mites out of those hair follicles and look for these little critters on a slide under the microscope. That, I think, would be in order for your dog.
Okay. Well, she has an appointment on Friday, but I just thought I'd take advantage of you being on the show
today. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and any veterinarian would probably be, besides looking at that, they'd look for bacterial infections. They might consider doing a fungal culture to rule out ringworm, which doesn't have to present with circular patches. It can be spotty as well. So depending on what they find, they may have to take it to the next step. But first thing I would be doing in a young puppy like that is a skin scraping.
All right, well, thank you.
You're
Andrew,
welcome.
Good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call as we talk with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine about pet care. And Jamie's next in Green Bay. Jamie, what can we do for you?
Hi, I'm calling about my mother's cat. She has an old feral cat that she rescued that's been a brat ever since she brought it home.
Okay.
And now she's trying to introduce my grandmother's sweet, affectionate cat to this horrible cat.
Oof. Yeah.
And I suggested she put her horrible cat down because that cat's been alive for much longer than it would have in the wild. And it's got some horrible habits, like not using its litter box.
Mm-hmm.
And the sweet, adorable new cat has taken to urine marking the feel-away things that are in the wall, but they're not feel-away. They're
comfort zone?
No, there's one I hadn't heard of. It's some other brand that's cheaper than comfort zone or feel-away.
Okay.
And she's scent marking that.
You've got a handful here. And first, I'm going to back up. And the one thing that, even as a veterinarian, I would never tell someone is end your pet's life, unless the owner, it would be something that I'd say, here are your options of things that you can do. Obviously, your mom is still very attractive, you know, likes this cat. She's lived with it for years. And you know, telling her to end its life, you're just going to end up having her put up big roadblocks to that. It sounds like it's a pretty stressful household, and it may mean that these cats are going to have to be kept separated, adding in more litter boxes, making sure that the stress that's going on is not leading to inflammatory disease of the bladder, which is causing the cat to be more irritated and, you know, peeing around the house. So, you know, getting, you know, good physical exams and urinalysis on both these cats, and someone needs to sit down and just go through floor plans and feeding setup and how the household is arranged so that maybe we can come up with some way of keeping this household de-stressed. My suggestion would be, if this, your grandmother's cat is so sweet, why don't you adopt it? There we go. You know, I mean, if it's such a sweet, sweet cat, maybe it needs to be in another home where it's not going to have to be with a healthy older cat that is crabby. Being crabby, boy, I think that would, we'd lower the human population quite a bit if that was legalized for people.
Yeah, so this cat's really old, and she just seems like she's in pain all the time. Every time she goes to pick her up, she cries like she's in pain.
Well, then so she needs to be.
It wasn't a totally heartless suggestion.
No, but then she needs to be looked at, because there are licensed pain meds that we can use for cats if there's something like that that needs to be done, and there's things that can be treated. So rather than just say, well, she's old, we're not going to do anything, age isn't a disease. Let's get her in and have her looked at and see if we can figure out what's wrong to, and make her life more comfortable.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, well, good luck, Jamie.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join in, there's a line open for you in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. We talked before the show about the 13 most common mistakes that dog owners make, and one of them is driving in a car with a dog that is not in the seatbelt. Is it necessary all the time to have a dog in a seatbelt?
Well, they're a projectile, okay? Mm-hmm. You slam on the brakes. Not only are you at risk, especially if you've got a big dog in the back, but the dog could be injured as well. I had a friend who got into a head-on collision, and her golden retriever died, went through the windshield. And she was lucky that it didn't decapitate her as it flew forward. And she ended up very injured with other things, too. So, mm-hmm. That's one of the big risks, is the pet being injured. Plus, just the distraction of having a pet loose in the car. They are, you know, they'll sometimes, you know, come up and, you know, jump up in the front seat and, you know, sitting on owner's laps and so on. That really could be a driving hazard. So keeping the pet confined to one area of the car is not only safer for the pet, but for the driver and anybody else on the road that's, you know, next to them in the car. So,
and the second one is leaving a dog alone without something safe to occupy itself.
Oh, you know, I get so many people that are frustrated saying, well, the dog tips the garbage can over, or it counter surfs, or it, you know, it's, you know, gets into trouble all the time. You have to dog proof your house, and you need to provide the dog with something to keep them mentally stimulated. To expect the, you know, especially a young dog, to just be hanging out and waiting for you to get home, they're going to find ways to entertain themselves. So, you know, you need to be able to, one, dog-proof your house, and then also be providing them with safe things that they can work on. And by safe toys, that doesn't mean, you know, necessarily rawhide, because they can choke on it. And I don't like to see dogs left alone with that. You have to know what's safe for your dog and provide them with things like that.
All right, Sandy, let's go to Lisa next in Crawford County. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. I have a Boston Terrier who has been diagnosed with Cushing's disease, and I guess I kind of feel lucky that it's, the tests have shown that it's adrenal gland. because I understand that 85% or so is a pituitary gland,
mm-hmm.
which can't be surgically
removed. Okay.
So my one question is, we're having an ultrasound next week.
Good.
My question for you is, how do I find, or do you know, surgeons who have performed this kind of operation?
Yeah,
because I understand there's a lot of veins close by and everything with the kidney. And
Cushing's disease is a very common disease in small breed dogs. We see it in large breed dogs as well. But it's basically overactive adrenal glands. And there's two forms of Cushing's disease, as you've alluded to. There's one where they develop a tumor in the adrenal gland. The adrenal glands are small structures that sit just on the end of each kidney, on the left and right side. And so you're right, they're right around a lot of structures, big blood vessels, the kidneys, and so on. So, you know, it can be complicated surgery to be able to get at them and safely remove them. The other type of Cushing's disease that we'll see is related to the pituitary gland, where you'll get a small nodule in the pituitary, which is a small structure at the base of the brain that is the control center for many of the glands in the body. And it tells the adrenal gland, you know, keep pumping out cortisol, which is the body's natural steroid. And that's what all the side effects are from a dog that has Cushing's disease. It's like being overdosed on prednisone or any other type of steroid. The dogs drink more water, they urinate more, their skin becomes thin, their liver becomes big, their blood pressure goes up. They're more prone to infections. They can live with it for a period of time, but eventually are going to have complicating issues that could potentially end their life. So it is something that we do want to treat. And actually, if I had my druthers, I would rather see a dog with pituitary-dependent Cushing's disease because it can be managed medically, doesn't need surgical intervention, and dogs tolerate medical management usually very well. The ultrasound is going to tell you whether there's a discrete adrenal gland mass or not, and how big it is, and you know what's around it blood vessel-wise, and that's going to give the surgeon an idea of what they're going to be encountering when they open up the abdomen. I think anytime you're getting into a complicated surgery like this, I'd be looking at going to a board-certified surgeon. And we are lucky in this state that we've got many of them in the area. Besides at the veterinary school, there are many specialty clinics in Waukesha, Milwaukee, Appleton area, you know, just in some of the surrounding communities outside Madison here. All over the place, we've got the specialty clinics, and I'm sure your veterinarian would be able to refer you to somebody that they trust, that they know maybe has done this surgery in the past, and has a track record of showing that they're, you know, good at dealing with this kind of stuff. Good luck.
I have another question.
What is that, Lisa?
One of the side effects is gas, and other than getting a methane digester, is there any? I've tried Beano with him.
Okay,
but that doesn't seem to phase him much.
Yeah, I've never heard of gas being a side effect of Cushing's.
He bloats.
He bloats. Okay, yeah. And I'm wondering if he's like panting more, because sometimes dogs with Cushing's will do more panting, and then they swallow more air. Being a little push-faced dog, he may be just, you know, swallowing more air. And so that may be what the problem is. Beano's going to help if it's due to fermentable fibers and things in the food, which is why we take it for when we eat beans and so on, to help with some of those, the bacteria digesting some of the sugars and things that we have a hard time dealing with. So I doubt that it's going to work on that. But I think that if you get the, you know, maybe get the Cushing's treated, the dog doesn't pant as much. There may be less air being swallowed and then less air coming out the other end. And so in the meantime, stay upwind. Okay. That's all I can suggest.
All right, welcome. Lisa, good luck to you. Thank you very much. And I'll just say that our previous Boston, Archie, was diagnosed with Cushing's disease and lived with it for several years, medically managed after that.
Yeah.
And then eventually muscle tone goes away. And as you say, then you get into a debilitating kind of situation.
But they can live with it for years.
Exactly. And our new little Riley, who's now about almost 2 years old, is a burper rather than the gasser.
Yeah. And it's probably, again, because they open mouth breathe. And it's very common with these push face dogs. I have two bulldogs at home. And yeah, I think I could probably start a methane plant right in my home. So yeah.
Let's go to Catherine next in Madison. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, good afternoon. Good morning.
Yes.
I'm calling about my mom's toy poodle. We live together now, my mom, and then, of course, the dog. This animal, he, for some reason, doesn't like me. And I haven't done anything to him. I can't say that I like him.
Okay.
I have a cat. They play together wonderfully. I mean, they're hilarious. I mean, they clinch and everything. They raffle. They chase each other. But he doesn't like me. He comes in my room. What kind of took it over the top is I keep my door closed now. He'll go in my room and he'll poop.
Okay.
Or he'll pee on my floor, on my rug.
Okay.
The worst was he jumped on my bed.
Okay.
And I knew it was him and not my cat, because if it was my cat, it would have ruined my bed.
Okay.
If he would have urinated it. And not black, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I knew it was the dog. And I didn't choke the dog. I thought about it.
Okay.
But it's my mom's dog, so.
Oh, well, I think, you know, I'd be making sure that the dog is, you know, again, I keep harping, go back whenever you have a behavior problem. Go back and make sure that you rule out medical issues, to make sure that the dog doesn't have a urinary tract infection, everything is normal, that it's, you know, it doesn't have a reason for eliminating in the house. It's possible that this dog may just be poorly housebroken. I'm not sure what its track record was before for going to the bathroom, but it may be that your bedroom is fair game because it's a place that they can, you know, run off and hide and do it. It's also possible that the dog is marking, although typically dogs are not going to mark with urine and stool. And so I'd be hesitant to say that this dog is deliberately doing this to tick you off. When you say he doesn't like you, is that the only thing that he does? Or is there other things that make you feel that he... just going to the bathroom in your bedroom.
Well, if I try to put him outside, like my mom's gone, at the pantry or something.
Yeah.
I'll try to put him outside to use the bed. I literally have to pick him up and set him outside. I mean, I joke around with my brothers and I'm talking about I pick him up and throw him outside, but I don't do that.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Well, what I'd be,
I can open the door and he'll run in my mom's room and jump on the bed and look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah. Well, what I would be doing is putting him on a leash, taking him outside, letting him go to the bathroom on the end of the leash. And once he's gone to the bathroom, then that would be when you would then immediately, as his fanny's coming up off the ground, give him something wonderful, a little piece of doggy beef jerky or freeze-dried liver or something great. So he thinks, wow, going to the bathroom outside in front of this person is the best thing that I can do. So, you know, I think, you know, making it a pleasant experience for him, you know, rather than having to chase him, you know, start working on making it a fun experience for him to go outside to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
Does that sound like a plan?
I'll try that.
Okay.
I'm not gonna try anything.
All right. Don't get frustrated. Okay. In the meantime, keep your bedroom door closed. Make sure you use a good enzyme cleaner to clean up spots where he's not going to be going back there because it smells like his toilet. So, you know, clean really well with an enzymatic cleaner. My two favorites for dogs are AIP, stands for anti-icky poo, okay? And the other one is urine off. And those would be two that are really good at getting the urine smells out of the carpet.
Oh, okay.
And are we dealing with carpet?
No. I have tile on my floor, but I have rugs.
Okay. Well, washing the rugs and so on and using an enzymatic cleaner even when you're washing the rugs would be helpful.
Good luck, Catherine. Thank you very much for the call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is our guest as we talk about pet care and behavior, and we'll talk about your pet in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us as we talk today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, who makes a monthly visit to answer questions about pet care and behavior. And Sandy, again, thank you very much for stopping by today. A couple more of these 13 most common mistakes that dog owners make. The next one would be not giving small dogs in particular enough exercise, believing a backyard is ample space for them to run around.
Well, you know what? I don't have small dogs. I've got two over 50-pound bulldogs, and I am just as guilty. I just fenced in my yard last year, and I have about a half acre fenced for them, so a big area mm-hmm. where they can get some exercise. And unless I go out there, they just tend to walk around and smell the flowers and, you know, and that's it. I have to go out and actually actively throw a ball, get them exercising. If I don't do that, then they would never get any exercise. So I kind of equate this to if someone were to take someone else to the gym and just put them in there. I mean, it's like unless you're like, you get on this machine, you work it, you know, go to this class, you're not going to do anything except just watch everybody exercise. So don't get into that sense of security that the yard is going to be a good gym for the dog. It takes a lot of owner interaction as well.
And another mistake would be punishing a dog more than a few seconds after it has done something wrong.
Oh, yeah. You know, we can reason because we understand English, and we can, you know, if I were to say, you know, Jim, you know, you left the coffee pot on and coffee burned and don't ever do that again, you'd go, oh, yeah, I did that this morning. I'll remember. Dogs aren't going to remember that, you know, oh, you know, guess what? I, like the last dog, went to the bathroom in the owner's mm-hmm. bedroom. If it's after the fact, forget it. You know, don't punish, because that ends up just creating a dog that becomes more anxious, more wanting to hide what it's doing, and can create a lot of problems. So punishment usually doesn't work. You need to be looking at what can we do to positively reinforce the behaviors we want. So like in that last case, I made the recommendation of going outside. What does she want? She wants the dog to go to the bathroom outside. So let's reward that behavior. Instead of just putting the dog out there, you go out with it and reward it. That's right.
And then clean up afterwards.
Then clean up afterwards. There you go.
Jack in Wilmot, let's go to you next. Hi, Jack.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the show.
Sure.
Dr. Sashak, I have a question for you. I've had two golden retrievers, wonderful animal companions, both.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my last one down. He was unusually beautiful, very light white and tan with a big bare head. And he died fairly early of cancer, and I gave him all the treatment, and then right after the end of the treatment, he started to get lumps again, and I just put him down because I didn't want him to suffer.
Okay.
I have an allergy to animals. Cats can kill me, and I have a slight allergy to dogs, but people have been encouraging me, a couple of people, to look at what they call golden doodles, the mm-hmm. golden and standard poodle combination. The ones I've seen, though, they look more like Airedales to me.
Okay.
Even though they're more like white or very blonde. But I've not seen a well-behaved one yet.
Okay.
I just wanted to know if you knew anything about them, and I don't know if you feel free to comment. But
yeah. I think
and I like a dog with a big bare head, and they don't look like a golden.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the big fad right now. We call them designer breeds. In fact, I was given for Christmas a coffee table book with page after page of put different dogs together, and what do you get? It's a crapshoot when you breed two purebred dogs together. What you're going to get? Genetics is not always a 50-50 thing, and so when we see dogs that are golden doodles, especially first generation golden doodles, people will think that they are not going to shed because, well, the poodles don't shed, and that's what we're trying to breed them for. We'll see dogs that shed and have the allergies of golden retrievers, the hair in the ears like poodles. And so you may get the best of both breeds, you may get the worst of both breeds, and it's a crapshoot. What many people that are doing this breeding will do is go back and breed a first generation golden doodle to a poodle again to get more of the curlier hair coat and more of the poodly type traits. But again, it's a mixed breed dog, and you're paying big bucks for a mixed breed dog. And I just have a hard time, recommending that someone go out and do that. If you're expecting a certain personality type, again, it's, that how much of the poodle is going to come through, how much of the golden retriever is going to come through, it's a gamble. Anytime you're going to be getting a dog, always go and visit with mom and dad. You want to see what their personality is like. And if you don't have mom and dad available, then I'd be, you know, really hesitant to be able to get the dog. And it's unfortunate that a lot of the big kennels and so on, you know, you may not have the access to being able to see what the sire and dam are like. So do your homework. That's what it comes down to, doing your homework. In fact, that was one of the top 13 things, too, of mistakes
exactly.
people make, is not doing their homework before they jump in and get a dog. And, they, you know, it sounds like you're, you know, really thinking this through and just taking the word
I
of somebody.
I've done it with my Goldens, but I think I'm just going to probably put up with the darn allergies and get another Golden and put up with the hair because I just love them.
Yeah. And, you know, just because you get a Golden Doodle doesn't mean it's not going to shed. So, and they may have curly hair and shed. So you may still be dealing with the allergy thing.
Jack, thank you very much. Good luck to you. Appreciate your call.
And I know I'm going to get hate mail and phone calls from people that are out there breeding. They're really a neat mix dog. But, you know, I just, when people walk in, and I had somebody in the other day that spent $1,600 on a miniature Golden Doodle. Female golden retriever bred to a miniature poodle. So it's a kind of a small looking golden doodle. And $1,600 for mixed breed dog.
Did it shed?
Yeah.
Okay. Jane and Toma, let's go to you next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I want to preface my question. I'm going to ask you a question about my daughter's dog that's visiting here. She came to Camp Toma for the week.
Okay.
My dog, Fly, who was 10 years old, had similar issues with storm and shelling from Fort McCoy.
Okay.
But Janice's dog, Lucy, is a 2-year-old, skinny, 20-pound, looks like a German Shepherd, but no German Shepherd. She's a Corgi Terrier mix, and she's scared to death of shelling at Fort McCoy. Thunder, loud trucks, mm-hmm. to the point where she shakes along. She shakes for 8 hours at a time. And our dog never was quite that bad. She'd shake for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. Noise phobias are very, very common. And there may be a learned component. You know, a gun fires off over their head and startles them. And now they're afraid of noises versus maybe genetic, where it started out where they were a little nervous and it will escalate over time. And the worst cases for me to see are the ones where the dog's so upset that it's jumping through windows and destroying the house and it's just absolutely terrified. I want to see him early on, when they're just showing a little bit of phobia. Things that you can do, number one, give her a bomb shelter. Let her have a spot that's safe, that is not, doesn't have windows, that's a little more soundproofed, an interior room, maybe down in the basement, where she can go and have a nice bed and hang out down there. We're going to plug in one of those DAP diffusers that we've been talking about on the show, which is a natural calmative. And then I'd also be going to the dog's veterinarian and saying, I need something for my dog. This is when we've got this level of anxiety, a case where we really need to use an anti-anxiety medication. I'm not talking about a tranquilizer. Some veterinarians will dispense a drug called acepromazine, which is a sedative, which is just going to make the dog a pancake that is still going to be able to hear everything. They just can't get up and get away. And we've actually found that dispensing that kind of medication alone will make the dog worse over time. We're usually using one of the drugs in the Valium-type family, so it's an off-label use of a human medication that you can use on an as-needed basis before the dog becomes anxious. So you watch the weather, or, you know, in this case, if you've got random shelling going off, this dog may have to be on something on a daily basis, and then we may be looking at another class of drug that we can use daily, like a tricyclic antidepressant. There's one that we actually have Paxil licensed for dogs now, Prozac licensed for dogs now. Eli Lilly has come out with their own particular brand of it. But there's, you know, several drugs like that that veterinarians can use, and it all depends on the dog, where you're living. And it sounds like if it's just random and it's not storm related, you may be needing something on a daily basis.
Well, she lives in Chicago.
Okay.
And when they had the air show there, mm-hmm. the dog got bolted out of the house.
Wow.
And she lives on a busy street.
Wow.
And so we wanted to avoid that before
yeah.
before next year. But I do have drops for her. Like, I think they're valerian.
Okay.
Is that going to do anything?
Probably not.
You can
try, but it is not likely to be of any benefit at all. So there's like certain things like Bach flower remedy called Rescue Remedy.
Yeah, I think I've got that.
And it won't hurt, but is it going to help? When they're this phobic, I find it rarely is effective.
Right. And can I put earplugs in her?
If she'll tolerate it, but it's, again, that drives a lot of dogs crazy as well.
Well, the fact that she's only 20 pounds.
Yeah.
20, 25 pounds. And what was the drug that you said?
There's several. They're prescription products. The ones that I would dispense would be alprazolam, which is a generic form of Xanax. Sometimes we'll use Valium or a generic form that drug, diazepam. There's another drug called clomipramine that we'll use. And sometimes we'll use fluoxetine or Prozac as well. So there's, depending on the dog, the health status, the degree of anxiety, sometimes we'll even piggyback certain drugs as well. But this would all be done under the supervision of a veterinarian.
This is so great. Thank you so
good
much.
All right, Jane. Good luck to you and to your daughter. And we'll go to the news in just a minute, but let me ask you another one of the 13 common mistakes, using a collar rather than a harness to walk small dogs.
Yeah, a lot of small dogs will have a very weak tracheal structure. The trachea, the airway, your windpipe, is made up of little cartilaginous rings, and small dogs will have, in many cases, weak cartilaginous rings. And so when they wear a collar and they tug against it, it can actually traumatize the neck and cause the trachea to collapse. And so I like to see little dogs, you know, wearing a little bit of a harness or something like that. And there's some safer harnesses out too. There's one that's called the Easy Walker, which is a great harness for a dog that pulls, that is not your typical one that does up over the back. It does up right over the sternum on the front of the dog, and I like that one.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. We'll be back with her and take your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we continue to talk about pet care and behaviors with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. And with the school semester ending, why, you're losing some of your students.
They're all graduating. I know. We have a new class of students starting on Monday, and it's always bittersweet, you know, to see these students go through 4 years of, you know, hard, long training and so on. And it's the students that we're graduating this year. I love this class. Anybody that gets any of our new grads are going to just be thrilled.
What are the job opportunities coming out of school these
days?
It's
amazing. There's more lots and lots of openings. I mean, if someone wants to stay in a certain location, may not quite be as lucky at finding something, their dream job, but there are definitely more jobs than there are graduates. So it's a wonderful profession to be in.
And in the time that you've been talking with us, more female students in veterinary school than there used to be?
Definitely. Females are now make up over 50%. I think it's closer to about 70% of the graduating students now. And even some vet schools, especially some of the older schools, have had to do some remodeling because used to be like all, you know, more men than women. And so there'd be like one women's bathroom and small locker room, and now they're having to flip things around and you know, really accommodate the fact that there's a change that way.
Let's take some calls, Sandy, and if you'd like to join in, the number for you in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. Jim's next in Madison. Hi, Jim.
Hi, this is a very interesting program. I have a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
We are new pet owners. We inherited a 6-year-old female poodle last year, and she does two interesting things. She preens me.
Mm-hmm.
When she's preening herself, either late at night or in the morning, she'll come to me and want to lick my hand and arm, and I don't have any food residue on my hand and arm. And I'm wondering if I'm the puppy she never had and she's showing love for me. And my second part of the question is, we'll be throwing the ball around the house, which she really loves to do. She'll grab the ball, and then she'll immediately roll over on her back
mm-hmm.
and spread her legs and want me to rub her tummy, which she loves.
Oh.
But is that, I thought the rolling over on the back is the ultimate act of submission.
Yeah.
That the animal is giving up.
Yeah.
Or is it just fun time for her?
Good questions, and you know what? I can't answer that without actually seeing your dog and what the other body languages are, you know, what else she's expressing while she's doing this. The licking habit, remember, puppies will lick the muzzle of the mother, kind of an appeasement-type licking, and so it may be that that's kind of a subordinate behavior as well. It may not be grooming, as you're calling it, or, you know, showing love, like us, you know, kissing each other, and it could just be habit, and she may just, you know, sit there, and it's relaxing, it's a repetitive motion, and so it potentially could be classified as a compulsive disorder as well. So just, you know, be aware that the licking, if you're finding it's too much, uncomfortable, redirect her to something else. Give her, you know, a toy to play with, something else to do, rather than encouraging her to continue to lick you, unless you happen to like that. And if you do, then by all means, you know, it's a great way of bonding and you like it, great. You know, as long as her teeth are clean and she doesn't have a mouthful of bacteria and you don't have any open sores, nothing to worry about. And that is an old wives' tale, by the way, that a dog licking their wounds are going to make them heal faster. So
not true.
Yeah, not true. Okay, especially if you look at some of the dog's mouths that I see coming in. So regarding the rolling over with the ball, again, it may just be that, you know, you're leaning over her to get the ball. She's a little poodle after all. And that just tells her, you know, okay, you're leaning over. You're showing me kind of a more controlling posture. I'm going to roll over and just show you that I'm a little weenie and that, you know, you can have the ball. And she may not be soliciting a belly rub per se, but maybe just showing that, you know, she's being subordinate. And that's great. I mean, I would rather have a dog that way than holds the ball and says, all right, come and get it, you know, make my day, and is not going to let it go. So sounds like you've got a wonderful little dog there.
We're enjoying her very much.
Good.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate hearing from you. And we'll go to Dave next in New London. Dave, what's on your mind this afternoon?
Yeah, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes. Welcome.
I have a female Sheltie that's a little over a year old. And we've had given her front line on two occasions.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, she didn't, she had a reaction, but we didn't realize it might be the front line.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a reaction, rapid heartbeat and things, and we thought it was something else. She got chills, breathing heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time we had given her front line, then we kind of put two and two together that she must be having some sort of reaction to it.
And you are using Frontline.
It's
not another over-the-counter product that
nope.
you... Okay.
Right from our veterinarian.
It is coming from your veterinarian. That's a very strange reaction because this is a drug that is not absorbed through the skin and is one of the safest products we have on the market. Sometimes the misconception is that if a product comes from a veterinary clinic, then it must not be as safe as the over-the-counter products. And by far, that is one of the safest products on the market. But there are individual dog reactions. And I would hope that this is something you've reported to your veterinarian,
right,
and that your veterinarian is also, you know, contacted the company to say, you know, we've had an issue with the dog so that it can be reported so that, you know, maybe we can start seeing a trend in certain breeds of dogs, lines of dogs, whatever. There are many other very safe flea and tick products on the market. You may want to talk to your veterinarian about using, there's a product called Vectra 3D. There's another one, Advantix, for flea and tick control. But again, every animal is an individual. Make sure that you're using the right dose, that you're putting it on in the right method. And for any of these spot-on products, they're meant to be applied to the skin,
right,
not to the hair, and in an area where the pet can't lick. But
we had put it right between, on the skin, right between like the shoulder blades.
Yeah, yeah.
And our veterinarian, when we told him about the reaction the second time, he had said that, just stop right away.
Right, right.
Giving it to her, and we'll have to think of something else.
Right, and I'd make sure the company gets contacted. This is the kind of thing where they have veterinarians on staff and you know, methods of reporting adverse reactions, and it is something that needs to be done, and unfortunately it's not done enough.
Right.
So get this on the records, and maybe you know, you can find something else that your dog is going to tolerate better.
Right. Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
All right. Dave, thanks very much, and glad that you're on the case. Let's go to Terry next in Winneconne. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I have a Skipper Tea that will turn 6 this summer, and I was running an errand, and so I missed the point where you were talking about dogs eating feces, because he's done that forever. We're out in the country, and so it's not only his own, it's, you know, bunny pellets and whatever he can find. Mm-hmm. But my real question, my daughter came home from college bringing a cat with her, and she's now left the cat in our care because she has a roommate who's deathly allergic.
Uh-huh.
And because of who the cat had lived with before, we'll only use the crystal litter.
Okay.
Not the scoopable stuff, but yeah. Which is nice because it dries up and it, you know, it doesn't smell.
Right.
But the dog is discovered snacking out of the litter box.
Oh.
And he's also discovered the litter.
Yeah.
He will eat the little crystals off the carpet, off of anywhere he finds them.
Huh.
And I don't know whether, you know, is this going to collect in his stomach and cause a problem or something of that nature?
Yeah. Really good question. I knew you were going to ask that as soon as you said it. And I'm like, I don't even know what the crystal litter is made out of. How bad is that? But it's one of the litters that we find is the least accepted of all the litters that are out there. And so I rarely ever recommend that clients use it. But if you've got a cat that's their preference, then you're going to have to keep using it. Again, just like the last caller calling the company, on the bottle or the can of the crystal litter that you're using, it's Tidy Cat Crystals, I assume. That is by one of the products that Nestle Purina makes. I would recommend that you call the 800 number on there and just say, here's what's going on. Is there any problem with my dog? Or is this an inert substance that is going to just pass on through without being a problem? So I'd be, you know, I'd get on the phone, call the 800 number. I'm actually going to do some homework when I leave here because I've never had this question before, and I think you've stumped the veterinarian. But back to the how do you keep a dog out of the litter box, you have to be able to have good access for the cat to be able to get to it, but not the dog. And it may mean installing a little cat door. Skipper Key's about the size of a cat, a little, you know, big cat. So the dog may be able to go through there. You may have to put on one of those little electronic collars and have one of the little magnetized doors that only the cat can operate. Sometimes putting up a baby gate where the cat can jump over but the dog can't is helpful. Covered litter boxes, boy, the cat may not like it and the dog can still get in there. The little automated litter boxes that self-clean, many cats are afraid of them. Be careful introducing one of those types of litter boxes. If you do, leave the other ones available. And I don't know whether they work very well with the crystal litter. Most of those are done with the scoopable type litters. But it is a nasty habit that dogs have. In fact, we call that kitty fritters, you know, so nothing worse. But I maybe next show I'll have some information on toxicity of crystal litter, but call the 800 number on that canister.
Okay. And a barrier is the only thing that's going to work because we have the covered litter box. And the cat is very fussy, and if I don't, you know, if I'm not very meticulous, she will not use the litter box. She'll pee on the floor outside, and so, you know, I'm really leery of changing the style of box.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess I'll see if I can figure out how to rig a baby gate or something.
Okay, and remember, the number of litter boxes for cats should be a litter box for every cat plus one. So if you don't have two litter boxes, maybe it's time to be adding in a second one, because that way the cat always has a clean one to be able to go to.
All right. Well, we only have one cat, thankfully.
So that means you need two litter boxes. So there you go.
Yeah. All right, Terry, good luck to you. Thanks very much. Hope we were able to provide some information for you. Danielle in Madison is next. Hello, Danielle.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a cat. He's about a year and a half old, and it seems like hairballs, he can't get them up. It seems like they're a terrible problem for him.
Okay. I just read something last night, and I thought this was very interesting, that for cats supposedly coughing up hairballs, doing like the gagging and coughing and sometimes, you know, that there are over 40 different diagnoses for quote unquote hairballs. Okay. Your cat could have asthma. Your cat could have bronchitis. Your cat could have heartworm. Cat could have lungworm. There are a whole host of things. So just because your cat may be posturing and gagging and periodically maybe a hairball will come up, is the hairball just going along for the ride and it was going to pass out, but because the cat is, you know, gagging or coughing or doing something, the hairball showed up. Don't assume that it is a hairball problem. By far, there's more common reasons why cats have chronic problems with this type of behavior. And I assume your cat's putting its head out and gagging and maybe doing a little wheezing and so on. Get them in for a physical exam. I would guess so many of these cats either have inflammatory bowel disease with associated gastritis or are asthmatic. And getting some good questioning done and maybe some workup, including a chest x-ray, may be necessary to be able to get some answers for your cat.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who would have thought it, you know?
Exactly.
Simple old hairballs, over 50 different or 40 different reasons. Yep.
Phenomenal. I'll have to go back and take a look at Louie now and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Danielle, thank you so much for your call, and on to Aggie in Manitowoc. Hi, Aggie.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions. We have a border collie, and she stays outside. We live out in the country. She's got a bad habit of jumping up on the car door when somebody drives in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things. And the other thing is she barks very viciously at men, especially. She'll bark like that when a woman drives in, but when they're trying to get out of the car.
Uh-huh.
But when she sees it's a woman, she calms down a little bit quicker.
Okay.
These
are the kind of things. There's a little phrase that I like to have people remember. If you can't control the dog, control the dog's environment. Okay. So in this case, you don't have cars coming in unless you've got your dog out there on a leash. You're with the dog, okay? You cannot have the dog just running loose. You'll never get the dog trained if it's a random event where you've got, you know, maybe one week you have a couple of cars come up and the next week nobody, and you're not there to be able to control the dog. So what I would be working with is you need to work with a trainer, someone that can help you with actually setting up little vignettes where the car is just starting to come up the driveway. The dog is on a sit stay and is being told what to do and you know, is doing the appropriate behavior. The car comes up closer. The dog's still on a sit stay and it learns what the appropriate behavior is for when the car is approaching. You're never going to learn this when it's somebody that is behind the wheel that doesn't know what's going on. You may need walkie-talkies. You got to work with somebody that, you know, you can say, okay, the dog's calm and relaxed. Let's take it a little step further and just gradually getting the dog comfortable with cars coming up. So, you know, even though you live out in the country, you got to get your dog under control, which may mean fencing your yard, having the dog on a tie-out, which actually may increase aggression because now you've narrowed its territory down. But I think it's going to take you being on the other end of the dog to be able to get this under control.
What we tried doing is, once in a while somebody would call and say they're coming. When we would put the muzzle on her.
Mm-hmm.
But she'd still, you know, do the barking and jumping up.
Yeah, well, the muzzling is just going to prevent her from being able to bite.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have to have her on a leash. How is she going to jump up on the car if she's 20 feet away from the car on the end of a leash?
Right.
All right. You know, and so this is, I mean, I think a lot of people with behavior problems are looking at what's an easy solution that doesn't involve me. Unfortunately, it almost always involves the human doing more of the work than the dog and changing our behavior in certain situations as well. So, you know, when someone calls you up, you have the dog on a leash. But even then, one time is not going to train the dog. You're looking at multiple repetitions and really working with somebody that is well-versed in, you know, desensitizing a dog to different conditions, such as the car pulling up or men. And it's going to take a little time.
Good luck to you, Aggie. Thanks very much for the call. John in Windsor is next. Hi, John.
Hi. Yeah, I called a couple weeks ago when you were with Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a healer mix.
Mm-hmm.
And your advice was to get her to the vet.
Yeah.
And I was finally able to get her to the vet. And I had the worst news possible. And she had Lyme's disease.
Okay.
And I had to put her down that day.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Was the Lyme disease affecting her kidneys? Is that what was going on? Yeah.
Her kidneys were, and she had lost so much weight.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But But what I didn't know at the time that they had that they and I didn't it was never I never knew that that they have a vaccination for Lyme's disease.
Yeah, yeah. This is Lyme disease and tick-borne diseases in general are becoming a huge issue for us in this state. In fact, my ex-husband's dog I had in and did a test, and what I'm recommending for dogs, you know, my clientele is annually doing a screen. It's called the Lyme 4DX, which looks at Lyme disease, Ehrlichia, and Anaplasma, which are all tick-borne diseases. Anaplasma is also spread by the deer tick, like Lyme disease is, and heartworm. So it's kind of an all-in-one test. It just takes like 3 drops of blood, very minimal, and it's a quick, easy test to run. And you'd be surprised at how many dogs we're seeing diagnosed with these various tick-borne diseases. His dog, which I still consider sort of my dog, was diagnosed with anaplasma. And so it is becoming a huge issue. So what we're recommending is annually screening, which will then maybe lead to other testing to see if they're clinically affected and maybe needing early treatment, using good tick control agents. And with ticks never dying out in winter, we had a winter this year where the snow was deep, the temperatures were fairly mild, so my guess is this year ticks are going to be bad because we didn't have a lot of die-off. They don't die out in the winter, they just hibernate. And then as soon as it warms up enough, they climb up and they're sitting there waiting to attach themselves to their next victim. And with the deer population expanding, wild turkeys and so on, those are all the hosts of a lot of our ticks. That's what we're seeing be a big problem is those are spreading. As those spread, the tick population spreads, and then us and our pets, we're all going to be at risk of picking up these diseases. So use a good tick control agent on your dog as directed by your veterinarian at least monthly, starting sometimes as early as February. And this last year, we needed it even on in November because we still had warm enough weather for ticks as late as November. So it's almost getting to be a year-round thing where we need year-round tick control. Vaccinating for Lyme disease, the vaccine is not 100% effective. It aids in the prevention of the disease. And if your dog in the future is at risk of being exposed, then definitely that should be part of the annual vaccination program as well.
What are the signs that you might see after a Lyme disease?
A whole host of things. And this is what I tell people to do is watch for lameness, swollen, painful joints, just being a little depressed and not themselves, a little lack of energy. I'm reading a list here because I actually came prepared. Mm-hmm. Lack of appetite, weight loss, vomiting, diarrhea, runny nose or eyes, persistent cough, reluctant to move or exercise, bloody nose, anything, you know, just tiring even with exercise. So you can see that goes along with any of these tick-borne diseases they can present with anything. And that's the problem with it is we have to just be suspicious of it and start testing for it. And that's why we do the screen on an annual basis.
John, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And Bernard in Eagle River gets the last one, I think. Go ahead.
Okay.
But you're going to have to make this.
I have two.
You're going to have
first
to make this fast.
Is where to purchase the Easy Walker harness?
Okay, that's a good question. There's a company called Premier Pets, and you can go online and you'll see them on there. If you just go online, you can order them online. Our local pet stores carry them as well.
Okay. Second question. I have an 8-year-old Schipperke, and about a year and a half ago, he had exploratory surgery where they shaved his belly and his 4 feet and our legs above his feet. Anyway, the hair grew back on his legs but has not grown back on his belly.
I would be looking at, does he have some type of a hormonal imbalance, either a thyroid problem or an adrenal gland problem? So bring this up with your veterinarian, and maybe they can do a little testing to see if they can figure it out.
Prednisone, is that, would that be related to that?
Yes, prednisone can cause hair thinning. Yes, definitely.
Bernard, thank you so much for the call. Good luck to you and with your dog. And Sandy, thank you very much for being here today.
You're welcome. I'll be here next month sometime.
That's right, next June, about a month from now.
Okay.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is a clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, where they're graduating a new class this week, and she has new students starting next Monday. We talk about pet care and behaviors, and if you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store at 1-800-747-747. 877-7444. Thanks to Steve Williams for on-air phone production today, and good luck to him in the future. And Larry will be back tomorrow. He'll be talking with Deborah Morse Kahn, gives us a guided tour of Minnesota's historic North Shore, and then Biking Summer School with Kathy and Eric Schramm.